I'm Felissa Rose Angela from Sleepaway Camp, and you're listening to The Boogeyman's Closet. Listen now.
And we are back for yet another episode of The Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And I don't have a penis.
I'm sure you guys already know from the title that this is episode 60, Sleepaway Camp. And yes, that actually was Felissa Rose that you heard at the opening there. Maurice and I had the pleasure of meeting her back in October of last year at Scaricon in Rochester. She was friggin' awesome, like super nice, loved talking to her fans. And I mean, Maurice, well, you know, you were there. What was your experience?
No, it was definitely a fun time. And she was really awesome. She was friendly with everyone, like you said. And she even gave me one of her movies for free.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, because we did the table photo. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we both got a photo with her. And Maurice, didn't you buy you bought a print and got it?
I bought a print. Yep.
Yeah. And then she was super chatty with us. And then we kind of moved aside because there was, you know, more people coming. And we circled back around before we left. And we noticed there was only like one person talking at the time because the con was closing up. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to ask her. And as soon as we brought up, you know, that we do a podcast, she was like, you know, and I told her we would love to have her do an opening for it. She was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, you know, she got the mic clipped right on. She got super excited to do it. So it was really cool. She was a very nice person. Really happy to meet her. So, and now we get to talk about her most infamous movie.
If I stand corrected, didn't Jonathan Tiersten do one too?
He very well may have. We'll see where that pops up.
Oh, okay.
But yes, he was also very cool. He was there as well. And good old Ricky. But yep. But as we said, this is episode 60. We're ending off our summer camp slashers with Sleepaway Camp from 1983. It was an hour and 24 minutes. And directed by Robert Hiltzik, which the only other thing I saw that he directed is Return to Sleepaway Camp. He did some writing and he did a lot of producing, but he didn't really direct anything other than this one and the last one. So, but let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks of this, campy classic, no pun intended. Susie, we'll start with you.
I love this movie. I am late to the party. I did not watch this movie probably until, oh God, maybe 17 or 18 years ago. And I am in my 40s now. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Colin, Mike, I know you know Colin and Sean, but he loves campy movies. We used to do this thing. We called it Horribly Awesome Movie Night, where Mondays he would come over. We would watch Flavor of Love or Charmed School. And then we would put on like what we thought was a horribly awesome movie. So I was perusing his movie collection one night, trying to pick like, what are we going to watch? And he had the first aid kit collector's box with mm-hmm. the first three movies. And I was like, well, this looks interesting. And I'd heard about Sleepaway Camp, but I'd never seen it. And he's like, oh, you're in for a treat. So he puts the movie in and like from the get-go, like the acting is not great.
Oh, yeah. That's putting it mildly.
I mean, I still call Ronnie is booty shorts. I don't even remember what the nasty ass like poop stained pants cook's name was, but I just call him what I wrote it down, Paul the Pedo, Pete the Pedo. And then you got the owner, I just call him Smokey. And then all the other campers. But watching it, I'm like, okay, so this is kind of along the lines of like Friday the 13th, the original, you don't know who the killer is. All those POV shots when the murders happen, and then the end. And you think you know who the killer is going to be. You think Smokey's got it figured out. And then the very end of the movie, the first time I saw it, I just sat there, my jaw dropped to the floor. Because I knew about the movie, but I didn't, I'd never heard about the ending. It was never spoiled for me. And I was like, holy fuck, Jesus Christmas Christ.
Yep.
And then he's like, all right. So we watched the other two, like the next 2 weeks. And I, this is one of, this is a movie that I can just watch over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I just, I never get sick of it. I'm still entertained by it. And I just, again, watching it critically, and we'll get into it a little more as we talk, but it's just, overall, this is just a really fun movie to watch, and I love it.
Yeah.
I'm right. Mic drop.
Maurice, how about you? What are your thoughts?
Well, much like, well, as you know, Mike, much like Susie, I was late to the party for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you actually, back when we worked together, you let me borrow the DVD, I believe.
I probably.
And that was my first time watching it. And I remember all you said was, the ending's a shocker.
Yep.
And, yeah, it was a shocker. As a matter of fact, I'm still shocked every time I see it. But, no, I like this movie a lot. It's, you know, your typical slasher from the 80s. Whodunit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like Susie said, that the acting is pretty bad.
Oh yeah,
hilarious. I mean, it should be a horror comedy.
It really should.
But, I mean, there's some cool scenes. A couple of the scenes are really cool to watch. But nothing we haven't seen before in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy the hell out of this movie. It's fun.
I don't think I've ever seen a curling iron to the vajayjay as a death before this movie.
Now, to be fair, I know it's implied, but do we actually know that it was in her vajayjay?
She probably shoved it so far up there that she ended up fisting her and pulling out her uterus, which killed her.
Well, actually, we'll get into this, but there is a follow-up movie where she didn't die.
Really?
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, is that the one that came out in 2008?
No. No, there is a movie called Judy. It is a follow-up directly about this character.
Oh, fuck Judy. Judy's real name, the actress's name, is Karen. They should have named the character Karen, much like in Blair Witch 2, where all the characters had their real actors' first names.
Right.
Judy is every teenage, awkward, unpopular, chubby, not fitting the mold. She is your worst nightmare. She is every single girl who ever picked on me and bullied me in middle school and high school. And she, curling iron to the vajayjay, that was too good of a death for her.
Tell us how you really feel.
Everyone in this movie who died, with one exception, and we'll get to that later, they totally fucking deserved it.
I thought she was hot and I liked her.
Of course. Again, you like the real fucking bitch.
Oh, I thought she was weird looking, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
It was the 80s. Boys and girls all had booty shorts.
It wasn't so much that. It was more or less that weird, like, scanner's look she would give every time she was pissed off about something.
Yeah.
Where her head, her one eye would get bigger than the other, like the tall man, you know? She'd get all weird.
I think that's just how she looked.
Maybe she's a frog. Maybe she's partial frog.
Maybe. She's got long legs.
She's like Cropsy. Remember you were saying he's like one of those frogs. That can lean out of the forest.
Yeah. Oh,
Lord. But yeah, again, much like both of you, I saw this movie later in life. I was 20 when I first saw it. I was 20. I'm getting my timeline all mixed up. I was 21 because it was after the crazy ass birthday party where me and Josh turned 21.
Mike is so old now that he can't remember.
I am, yes. No,
but I'm still older than Mike, and I think I remember this party. Is this the one where I passed out just as parents were out of town?
Yes.
And then I just sat up and like fluffed my hair, looked around,
yes,
and laid back down.
Yep. It was, I want to say the fall of that year, because I believe that's when Josh and Christina moved to Rochester, was like late summer, early fall. But I remember it was later. It was like when they first moved to Rochester, it was me and Josh and their roommate at the time, Jared. We would go, me and Josh were still working on the comic book. Like, for those of you listening, many of you don't know, like, I used to, you know, aspire to be a comic artist. Didn't happen. but made a few comics. But we'd be working on Oopai, and, like, our break time, what we would do is we would go and rent, like, two, like, horrible movies, sometimes three, like, if all three of us could find something. But we would, the thing was, either it had to be a really good film, something like The Thing or Ravenous or something that all three of us agreed we want to watch again, or it had to be something with a ridiculous cover on the box, like something that just looked super dumb that none of us had ever seen. So we saw a lot of weird movies that way. But Josh picked out Sleepaway Camp Part 2. Because there's the camper holding the backpack with the Freddy glove, the Jason mask, and the chainsaw. And he's like, we gotta see this. And I'm like, all right, let's sit down and watch this. And as you guys know, I'm sure you guys have seen Part 2. It's fucking ridiculous. Like, it's one of those movies I'd love to get on this show because it's so ridiculous.
The song Angela sings to the campers.
Yes.
That I don't know why that never made, like, a Casey Kasem America's Top 40.
The I'm a Happy Camper.
Yes. I love the clear blue sky. And with the grace of God, I will camp until I die.
Or you die.
Exactly.
More likely I die.
We got to get that on here. But that's the thing. That movie, we thought it was the funniest fucking thing. And we actually started, like, we started a count while watching this movie. We're like, all right. Because there were so many mullets. We're like, Jared, you count how many mullets there are. And then Josh was counting how many bare breasts there were in the movie. And I was counting kills. So, and like, I forget the end totals, but we were so tickled by how many that this movie showed that we're like, we got to see the rest of this franchise. So the following week, we rented Part 1 and Part 3. So we went back to the first one. And the whole time we're bored. We're like, this is so, like, boring in comparison to Part 2. Like, we didn't like it for what it was. Like, we didn't appreciate it yet. I mean, there were moments that we were like, that's really funny, or that's really interesting, or that's kind of a cool death scene. Like, I mean, come on, the boiling water, which we'll get to, that's a cool scene. But when we got to the end, all of us just stopped. Nobody said a damn thing. We all just stared at the screen in horror. And eventually Jared just got up and walked away. He was like, no. Nope. Like, I don't know how I feel about this anymore. It left an impact. So then we watched Part 3 and immediately all started giggling because it opens up with the titty tattoo milkshake.
Who the fuck throws a person into a garbage truck?
Exactly.
That's like one of the greatest deaths ever.
The fucking carpet fresh.
Yes.
Oh my god, we just gotta watch all of them on this show. But yeah, and oh my god, and the little dude who kept calling the girl Sweet Pea was like, Sweet Pea. That guy, like, oh my god,
he was in Scrooged. He was one of the homeless guys that he meets in the shelter. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that he's Liz Taylor's husband or ex-husband. He keeps calling him Dick.
That's right.
And then fast forward and like he meets him in the sewer and he's frozen to death holding the pocket watch. He's like, hey, hey, yep. It's Dick.
That's right. Oh, I forgot about that scene. Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Dick isn't going to warm you up enough to live. That actor actually died, I think, last year.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, he was up there.
Yeah, but he's, every time I see him, no matter what it is, like when I saw Sleepaway Camp 3, I'm like, oh, it's the homeless guy from Scrooge.
Wait, was he in House of a Thousand Corpses? Was he the little guy talking to? Okay, yes.
At the very beginning. Oh my God, what was the nursery rhyme? The guy's name, he goes, played with his prick, doesn't the smell of it make you sick?
Yeah. That's because he was talking about the guy shoving a Dr. Zaius doll up his ass.
Yes.
Wow, we've already gone off the mark. We haven't even got to the fucking the cast.
Exactly.
Oh, this is going to be a fun ride. So basically we all agree the movie is fun as hell. But yes, the cast playing Angela is Felissa Rose. Now, she is one of those actresses that is just she's fucking working, man. Like, she is making so many awesome films. Now, she didn't really get back into acting until the early 2000s. Like, she, you know, she made this movie and then that was kind of that. And then in the early 2000s, it was like, fuck it. I will just throw myself into acting. And she's just in everything. So I only wrote down a couple of the titles that I recognize, but she's got like 100-something credits to her name already. But Zombiegeddon, Return to Sleepaway Camp, Silent Night, Zombie Night, Dahmer versus Gacy, Camp Dread, which was almost on this list, Tales of Halloween, which will eventually be on another one of our lists, Terror Tales, Swamp Freak, The House That Wept Blood, The Perfect House, Victor Crowley, Death House, and she's in two upcoming movies, one that I can't wait for, Terrifier Part 2, and one that I couldn't stop giggling at when I saw the title, COVID 2021. So I'm like, oh, look at that. I feel like that's a Roger Corman joint. But then we have Ricky, played by Jonathan Tiersten. He's in Another World, The Perfect House, Return to Sleepaway Camp, The House That Wept Blood. And he's in an upcoming movie called Toilet Zombie Baby Strikes Back.
That's just gross.
That feels like a trauma movie. Then Judy, as we mentioned, Karen Fields, the only other thing she was in is in the movie called Judy, which apparently is a short film, but it's a film about the character. Then we got Paul, played by Christopher Collette, The Manhattan Project, The Cosby Show, MacGyver, The Langoliers. He's in the Purge TV show. And then he does a bunch of voice work for cartoons like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh! And G.I. Joe Sigma 6. So he's basically in his later years, he just started doing voice acting. Then Mel was played by Mike Kellen. He died right after this movie. In fact, he was really sick during the filming of this movie. I guess he had lung cancer, but, he was in Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Rifleman, The Untouchables, bunch of Western stuff like The Outlaws, Rawhide, Gunsmoke. Then he was in, The Twilight Zone, Alfred Hitchcock Hour, and another film that almost made the cut for this month. Like on the docket to vote. So it will eventually come back, but Just Before Dawn. That it's another one of those movies, much like this one, where the ending, it's the ending that really fucking seals it. Because it was one of those banned horror movies for a while. And I got my hands on it once they finally released a DVD. And I'm watching it going, why the fuck was this movie banned? Like, it's your basic camping slasher movie. And then there's a scene at the end, and I won't ruin it here, because
haven't watched it. I've never seen it.
I won't ruin it. It's just like, when you see it, it's like, holy shit. So, it's good. Definitely worth watching. But then we have Meg, played by Catherine Cammy. I couldn't stand Meg.
Fucking bitch. Her and Judy.
Fucking Meg. Yeah. All My Children, Guiding Light, NYPD Blue, The Ghost Whisperer, Bones, Medium, Castle. She's in a lot of television stuff. Ronnie, or...
Booty Shorts.
See, I was like, that's when you order Tony Danza from Wish.
Oh my God, it totally is.
And you know what kept throwing me is he kept saying Angela. So I, in my head, I just come here, hey, Angela. Like the fucking who's the boss thing.
Oh, I'm so sad that I didn't make that connection because that is perfect.
The whole movie, I was giggling about it.
He is what you get when you order Tony Danza from Wish.
But that's Paul D'Angelo. He's in Silent Madness, The Real Thing, Destination Fame, and Return to Sleepaway Camp. Then we have Mike, played by Thomas E. Vandel. The Muppets Take Manhattan, Heaven Help Us, and Under the Bed. Billy, played by Loris Duran. The only thing I saw in there was Fame. Kenny, played by Johnny Dunn. He was in All My Children. Mozart, played by Willie Kirsten. Only in this movie. A couple people are only in this movie. Aunt Martha. Oh, she was fucking weird. Desiree Gould. She was in Tales of Poe and Under Surveillance. Artie was Owen Hughes. He's only in this movie, which, you know, your first role as a creepy ass pedophile, it's going to be hard to cast you again.
Yeah. Pete the pedo.
And then finally, Ben was played by Robert Earl Jones, who was in Kojak, Trading Places, and Maniac Cop Part 2. So, but yeah, for those of you that don't know, the plot of this movie is Angela Baker, a shy, traumatized young girl, is sent to a summer camp with her cousin. I can speak. Shortly
she's
after...
coming, all right.
Zing. Shortly after her arrival, anyone with sinister or less than honorable intentions get their comeuppance. So it's an interesting whodunit summer camp slasher. So we open the movie up with the title card over a lake, and the camera is kind of panning around the camp, and it's this big empty camp, and we're hearing like snippets of incoherent conversation, like echoes. And then eventually we land on the sign that says Camp Arawak, and there's a big for sale sign over top of it. And then we cut to boats on a lake, and we see two little kids on the boat, like a brother and sister, and they're arguing while their dad just lays in the sun. And eventually the dad breaks up the argument, and we cut to these two dumb teenagers in a speedboat pulling a water skier behind them. The guy that's driving, doesn't he have a lifeguard shirt on?
Yes, he's a lifeguard, and the girl that's sitting next to him is the girl he wants to get it in with. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to get him to let her drive the boat, and he tells her, like, that he's going to get fired, and she's like, oh, you're not going to get fired. He's like, what, is your daddy going to give me a job when I get fired? And then fucking dumbass, like, letting his cock think for him, like a lot of teenage guys do.
A lot of adult men do, too.
I didn't want to generalize. He's like, all right, switch with me. So when they switch spots, he like rubs his dick against her back and is like, all right, it's worth risking my job. just so I can backfuck her.
I got a little bit of spine. Is that it?
Yeah. Ribbed for his pleasure.
Oh, zing. But yeah, so she's now driving, and we cut to the kids on the boat with their dad, and he's like kind of just standing there, hands on his hips, looking off into the water, and the kids push him and the whole boat tips over and they're all laughing and playing in the water.
He's like, oh, you little rapscallions.
And then we see some other random dude come up on the shore. Now we don't know who this guy is yet. Comes up on the shore and he's like, hey, was it John or whatever the dad's name is? Like, hey, John, we got to go. The doctor's office is going to be closing. It's like, oh, okay. So he's calling dad and the kids out of the water. And then the dummies in the speedboat aren't watching where they're going. They're both looking back at the water skier who is screaming bloody murder, trying to warn them about straight ahead. There's two kids and a guy in the water. They turn, it's too late. The guy starts screaming at the dumb teenage girl to turn the boat. She does, like, she can't do it, so they switch spots, and as she's getting up, she hits the accelerator, and the boat goes straight over the family and hops their little overturned boat.
we get dad floating. There's no blood, though.
I don't
understand. Dad is just floating like a dead man's float.
Yep.
And then the camera moves slightly to the right, and then up comes like a shorn life jacket. Like, did the life jacket absorb all of the blade?
I was just going to say, because there was no blood in that. It was just
Jaws had more blood.
Right. It was a shredded life jacket. And we do see one kid splashing and sputtering from behind. Like, we don't see, you know, the face of the kid's
face. Right. Although it's just the back.
Yeah. Although it was still kind of obvious from the back what's going on here. But we'll get to that later. But I loved that montage, because it was like, girl on the water skis is just screaming bloody murder, like really trying to prove her acting chops.
This is how it went down. So we'll just say vagina and penis are sitting in the boat and they're oogling at each other, getting kind of excited. And then you got like the person who, the innocent bystander, we'll call her. She's yelling, but because of the motor, it sounds like, watch out, there's a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what? And she's like, watch out, there's a boat. And then they turn around, and that's when the accelerator gets stepped on and all hell breaks loose.
Right. But I mean, like, after the death, we see her in the water. She's like, oh my God, help them. Someone help them. Oh my
someone
God.
Someone help them, please. Please, someone help them.
We see dude on the shore, like, slowly raise his hand to his mouth, like, oh no. And then we just see the dummies in the boat staring, like, slack-jawed at what happened. We see Dad do the dead man float, as you said, the kid splashing, and then the shredded life jacket. All like, that montage is just hilarious. And then we fade out, and it says 8 years later, and then we cut to creepy-ass Aunt Martha coming home. This lady, oh my God.
So, the first time I ever saw this movie, honest to God, and I try not to be offensive on the show. I thought the very first time I saw this movie that Aunt Martha was a drag queen.
I mean, the way they have her dressed, it's very theatrical.
Because of that and how over the top she is. But in subsequent viewings, I'm like, no, she's just mentally ill.
Yeah, she's like, not, I'm not saying crazy to be like, you know, funny. She's like legit, something is really wrong.
Ricky, Angela, the bus is here. You don't want to be late. And then she'll like, she has the string tied around her finger. And every time I watch this movie, I think of the book I read when I was like 5 years old, when I first learned how to read. Mm-hmm. It was the Bert and Ernie Sesame Street book. And it was called Don't Forget the Peanut Butter. And it's all about Bert and Ernie going shopping. And Bert ties a string around his finger so he doesn't forget the peanut butter. They shop and then they get home. And he's like, what's the string? Oh, I forgot the peanut butter.
Yep. But like, just when she first comes in, like her cadence, she goes, hurry, sweetums, we don't want to be late for the ball. And then she pauses and she has this weird tick where she'll pause and she'll put her finger up to her mouth. And she goes, goodness, no, that wouldn't do at all now, would it? And then goes right back into Angela, Ricky. It's like, what the fuck?
So when we get a little further along,
mm-hmm.
I have a question about who Aunt Martha's husband is in relation to the beginning of the movie, because Aunt Martha is mentioned at the beginning. One of the two kids on the boats with the dad says something about is Aunt Martha coming and bringing Ricky too?
That's right. Yeah.
So we'll get into it a little further along, but I've always questioned that specific thing, but let's go.
Okay.
And she proclaims herself as a doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh. Which I mean,
who the hell would want her as a doctor?
I mean, they got a pretty damn big house, so maybe she was practicing. I mean, you know.
did she do the Harley Quinn, start off as a doctor, then become nuts?
No, I think she was nuts and just faked it to get a doctorate.
Oh, okay.
She got one. She got her medical degree in international waters where they don't check.
Oh, okay.
Right.
I can believe that.
But So yeah, so speaking of the doctor thing, she hands both Ricky and Angela their physical forms, like, to hand in for the camp. And she's like, and she says, "Now don't tell them how you got them." And then she pauses and goes, "Oh no, they wouldn't approve of that at all, now would they?" And then she cuts right back. She's like, "Even though I'm a doctor," and it's like, okay.
And then weird. We find out at the end why they wouldn't approve of that.
Yep. So then we see them leave, and I love this because I'm sure you guys had the subtitles on, but it says, it said intriguing music. That cracked me up.
Very intriguing.
And all the music in this was very daytime soap opera.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of sweeping music, and like the music swells in certain moments. It's very funny.
Well, wait till later on, the big kiss moment.
Yes, I have that in.
Oh my goodness.
The music cracked me up. Oh my God. So yeah, so you see all the kids get on the bus, or the kids get on the bus, and then we cut to the camp, and we just see the buses arriving and kids just unloading and running through the camp like monsters. Fucking counselors trying to yell like directions at them, and these kids are just running around like blah, 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 just screaming and waving their arms. And this is where we meet the creepy cooks. This whole sequence. So they run by, and we got like the two head cooks and a couple of young guys that I'm assuming just work in the kitchen. And Artie, he's sitting there chewing on like a piece of wheat, and he goes, "Look at all that young, fresh chicken." And he goes, where I come from, we call them baldies. And then he goes, "Makes your mouth water, don't it?"
Oh, so disgusting.
It's so nasty. And then
Ben, I want to set him on fire right at that moment.
I know, right? In fact, I remember the first time we watched it, it was me, Josh, and Jared watching this. We're like, what the fuck? Like, it really, like, threw all of us off. Because, I mean, you know, anytime there's, like, a pedophile in a movie, it's very clearly telegraphed, bad guy, bad guy. But, you know, it's like, you kind of know about. This is just, hey, it's a random camp counselor, and he's saying this horrible shit about young kids. It's like, yeah. But, Ben goes,
it makes it even creepier because after he says that, because you see this, the kids running off the buses mm-hmm. into the camp, and he's watching them, and he says that, and then it just, the shot goes to a bunch of like prepubescent girls running yep. toward their cabin, and that just makes me fucking sick.
I agree. And
he's fucking disgusting.
Well, and that's one thing that this movie really does is a lot of the characters who are killed, as you know, we said in the plot synopsis, like they give us a reason why they're killed. So like right off the bat, you know, it's like, well, Artie's going to die and for good reason. Mm-hmm. But he says, or Ben says to him, he goes, "Artie, they're too young to even understand what's on your mind." And he goes, "Ben, good buddy, there ain't no such thing as too young. You're just too old." And then he laughs and it's like, you know, Ben, you're kind of an asshole, too, because you're just letting this happen.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that whole scene is really gross. But then we cut to Ricky and Angela walking, and Paul jumps out of nowhere and scares Ricky. And then Ricky introduces Angela and Paul, and Angela, of course, doesn't speak because that, you know, she doesn't speak to anybody. And then
yet.
Paul. Yes. Paul says to Ricky, goes, "Hey, Rick, wait till you get a load of Judy." He goes, "Man, oh, man." He just gestures big titties.
And they're not even that big.
No. But I guess when you're like 14 or whatever, that, right. that feels big. But
yeah, she's ugly on the inside.
And on the outside. Like I said, she's got that one popping eye.
like Mad Eye Moody.
Right. Mad Eye Judy.
Yes, Mad Eye Judy. Somebody, please do a Photoshop.
Oh, Lord. But so Ricky explains to Angela that he and Judy were steadies last summer. And, you know, they're walking up to their cabins and they see Judy talking to a bunch of older guys. And Ricky tries to say hi to her. And she just kind of brushes him off, not interested. And he's like, "I guess she's too good for me now." Now, so this is our first. And I wrote in here, Susie's going to say Judy is a real bitch.
Yeah, I have it written actually several points in the movie. That fucking bitch, fucking Judy, fuck that dumb cunt. And you know, Mike, I hate that C word.
That's hilarious.
she is the worst.
Oh, she is. She's terrible. But Well, I don't know. Meg gives her a run for her money because now we cut to the girl's cabin.
Meg and Judy should just be... They're like the Siamese twins in Hellraiser 2. But they're not conjoined or twins or related.
Every single time Meg spoke, all I could hear in my head was Peter Griffin going, "Shut up, Meg." You know?
Yeah.
It's like, she really does. She's terrible. But, so yeah, we meet Meg and Susie, who are like the two, I guess, counselors for the girls. And we see Judy dumping out her bag on her bed, and Angela just stares at her creepily, much to the annoyance of Judy and Meg, who both kind of like get all up in her face. And, you know, Susie kind of stops it. You know, she gets in there and she's like, "Oh, you know, you'll be fine here, blah, blah, blah," and just kind of talks to her. And then we cut to the mess hall. And I said, Meg gets Tony Danza. So, Ronnie.
Booty shorts.
He comes over to the table, and Meg is complaining. She goes, "She hasn't spoken in 3 days, and she's not eating anything." And Ronnie goes...
He totally does sound like Tony Danza, though. He's like, "Angela, Meg here tells me that you haven't really eaten much. Is there something that you would maybe want in the kitchen? Would you like me to take you there?" And she just looks at him like... Who's the boss hasn't started yet.
Exactly. He was practicing for the role.
Which he didn't get, thank God.
But I put Ronnie in his shorty shorts thinks that Angela's just homesick, so he brings her to the kitchen to find something else to eat.
To search for sustenance. And they get in the kitchen and they meet Ben. And doesn't Ronnie ask, "Where is Pete the pedo?"
Yeah, he's like, "Where's Artie at?" And then he comes out of the walk-in carrying a beer.
And he's like, he makes him put the beer down. He's like, "Hey, Pete the pedo, Angela here don't like the food. Maybe you can help her get something that she would like." And he's like, "Huh, yeah, I will."
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just, I'm so uncomfortable watching the move, like that part of the movie.
This whole sequence right here, because, yeah, he brings Angela. He gets real close to Angela's face. Ronnie gets a phone call, so he leaves. Ben turns and looks the other way, and Artie, like, puts his hand on Angela, and he's like, "Maybe we can find you something in the walk-in." Like, real creepy. Brings her in the walk-in, and then, like, he kind of corners her in there. Like, she's up against the wall, and he comes in, and he starts telling her that he's gonna find something she'll like. She'll like it real good. And then he starts undoing his belt. And it's like, you fucking sicko. Now Ricky comes in at this point. He comes looking for Angela, and he walks in the walk-in, and he sees Artie undoing his belt, and he's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Then Artie just goes from 0 to 100. He grabs Ricky and starts bashing him against the shelves, going, "You didn't see nothing, see? You didn't see nothing."
"You're not going to tell anyone, you see, you dirty rat."
And then you see Ricky and Angela go running out of the walk-in, and they run past Ben and Mel, who's just coming in. And then Artie's coming out doing up his belt, and Mel's going, "You know, well, what the hell's going on here?" And Artie goes, "Oh, I guess I must have scared him." And he goes, "Yeah, I guess so." And he just, again, both turning a blind eye to Artie's shenanigans. It's like, ugh. Every one of them deserved what they got.
Yep.
But then we cut to a scene of a giant pot of boiling water on the stovetop. And Artie has to, like, put a chair there to just get up there to check the pot of water.
It's him and Ben. And he's like, "That water boiling yet?" And Ben's like, "I don't know. You should check it." And he touches the lid. And he's like, "God damn it.
Yep.
Give me that chair." And then he gets, like, a towel or something. Yeah. He's like, "Nope, not ready yet." And then Ben is like,
Ben leaves.
Corn. He's like, "I'm going to go throw this out," or whatever, and leaves Pete the pedo alone in the kitchen by himself. And then he climbs up on the chair and he, like, shakes the salt, and the salt is empty. So he climbs down, gets another thing of salt. And then we see the point of view of the killer.
Our first POV shot.
And he is fucking gross.
Yeah. We get the POV shot, and then we see Artie climb back up on the chair with the new salt. And he goes, he says, I'm like, "Oh, there's my girl." And he starts dumping the salt in. And the POV shot gets closer and closer. And we just get this close up of Artie's shitty pants. Like, what the hell?
Like, he is already a fucking ugly person. Makes it worse that he's a pedophile. And he can't wipe his own ass properly.
So much so that it's bleeding out through his pants.
Right. Like, has he never changed his underwear or washed his clothes?
Oh, it's so nasty.
Oh, he's so fucking gross. Like, ugh.
But so we see somebody grabs, or somebody reaches out and pushes Artie. And he falls forward and he grabs the shelf that's right above the stove. And like, he now he's like kind of over, like kind of on an angle over the pot of water. And you see the chair slip back a little bit. And he turns, he looks back at whoever it was, and he goes, "You little fucker, you could have killed me. Now get over here and help me down." And then he stops. He goes, "Come on, kid, get me down. I'll make you a nice ice cream sundae." So now we know it's a kid. Like, he does say, "Come on, kid."
Mm-hmm.
And then we see the hand reach out and grab the chair and starts to pull it a little bit more, like just fucking with him. And Artie starts screaming bloody murder for help. And then they yank the chair all the way. Artie falls and takes the giant pot of boiling water with him. And then I love the way this is shot, because you just hear him screaming and you see the two like boiled and blistered arms like reach up into frame shaking. Oh, it was so painful looking.
But you know what? He deserves it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't feel sorry for him at all. But then we cut to, oh, no, we see Ben come running in because he hears Artie screaming. And we see he looks shocked. And then we get a close up on Artie's face. And it is just covered in like blisters and red burns. And like some of the blisters are like pulsating. It just it looked nasty. But it very, very much like Toxic Avenger.
He didn't die. He's like one of the, he's the only one that Angela targets and doesn't actually die. But you know what? Bitch ain't going nowhere anytime soon. I watched the Kane Hodder documentary.
Mm-hmm. Well, they even make a comment, like, because the next scene we see paramedics wrapping up, like, you know, basically turning Artie into a mummy and taking him away on a stretcher, and he's screaming bloody murder the whole time. And the doctor is talking about how much pain he's in. He's saying he doesn't have enough, he doesn't have the right type of drugs to numb the pain that Artie's feeling. And he says like how every nerve ending in his body must feel like it's on fire. And Tony Danza asks, "What about his eyes?" And he goes, "It's too early to tell." So even his eye, he might be blind after this.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, good. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Artie really got what he deserved.
I'm actually glad he lived so he can suffer through the pain.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, he's gonna be feeling that for a long time.
And then Smokey comes in, and there's Ben is the elderly man's name, right?
Yeah.
So it's Ben, and then there's like three young chaps who work in the kitchen. And Smokey's like, "So Ben, looks like with Pete the pedo out of commission, you're the head honcho." And Pete and Ben is like, "Well, I wasn't really thinking much about myself." And Smokey goes, "Well, how's another $50 a week in your pay?" $50 a week back then. I didn't even do the calculation. I'm so ill prepared today. $50, I'll do it while we keep talking.
Well, $50 hell, I more. Take $50 a week now.
I know, right? I was just thinking right. That.
$50 extra a week in your paycheck. And then he points to the boys behind him and he says, "And 15 extra for him."
Right.
For each of them.
Yeah.
Right. So inflation calculator. Keep talking. I'm going to do this.
So basically Mel is trying to shush it all up. His whole reason for wanting to pay them more is because he's like, "Let's keep this quiet. If anyone asks, Artie got another job. You know, we don't want to scare the kids. We don't want to freak anybody out." And that's when, you know, he offers them the money and then they all kind of smile and agree. And prior to that, when he was talking to Ronnie and the cop or the doctor, I'm sorry, he was talking to the doctor and Ronnie. He was saying like how it's a horrible freak accident. And, you know, so this is going to be a running theme with Mel wanting to hush everything up that's happening at the camp. Do you have the calculations?
I do. So $50 extra a week in 1983 would be an extra $130.07 today. And the other boys who got an extra 15 a week, it would be an extra $39.02 a
week. Shit. I would gladly take either of those right now.
Right?
I mean, hell. that's still good money. I mean, it was better money back then, but.
Well, if you think if you get paid biweekly, I've always been paid biweekly. And Mike, I think you, are you paid biweekly too?
Yep, biweekly.
So to me that, I mean, it's double that. So that's $260 more in my check.
Yep. That's a nice chunk of change.
That's like a car payment.
I was just going to say, that's quite a bit of bills.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now we cut to the boys' cabin, and we meet Mozart for the first time. Now, he's like the chubby kid that they keep playing pranks on. He's laying on the ground, and Ricky's like the ringleader here. He's telling Mozart about how he's going to hypnotize him. And no matter how much he tries, he's not going to be able to sit up. It's mind over matter. He's not going to be able to sit up and blah, blah, blah. And so he's got this blindfold over Mozart's eyes. And then he counts down. He's like, okay, 1, 2, 3. And he pulls the blindfold off as Mozart goes to sit up. And he sits up right into Paul's ass. Because Paul's like bent over in front of him. So he gets a face full of Paul ass.
He's like, you guys, Paul ass and ball chin.
And I'm thinking that's a good way to get pink eye.
It totally is.
But so then they all end up going out and with Gino, the counselor Gino, they go to play baseball against the older kids. So the old douches, as I will call them throughout the movie, they want to make a bet that they're going to kick the crap out of the young kids. So Ricky ups the odds the old guy wanted it to be $1 per guy. And Ricky was like, how about 5? And they're like, you're on, you little asshole. So they play a game of baseball. The kids whoop them. The old douches are pissed.
So they're all standing around like, my dick is bigger than yours. I'm going to win.
Exactly.
No, my dick is bigger. Look at how short my shorts are. My dick is clearly bigger. Look.
Oh, I hated that guy.
He was such
a dick. Oh, my God. But yeah, so we cut from the baseball game to a party where the old douches are all standing around in a circle talking about how they need to go skinny dipping, but first they got to bring some girls.
So this whole part is very, or not this, we'll get to it, but I feel that parts of this movie are very homoerotic.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I never see like when we'll keep going, I'll get to it.
Okay. Well, this
so part, they're at the social.
And I find this part disturbing to begin with because they're clearly the older kids. It's like, you know, the seniors of the bunch versus the freshmen kind of scenario. And they're talking about girls to ask. And the one guy goes, how about you ask Angela? And he's like, oh, she's a fucking freak. And they're talking about. And then the one guy, Kenny, he finally gets his balls up and he's like, oh, I'm going to go talk to her. And it's like, I don't know. It just felt weird. Like, I get it. Age is not that big of a deal when you're older. But when you're younger like that, like a couple years feels like a big deal. You know, maybe it's just me, but senior and freshman, right. You know, it just feels wrong. Like they've clearly gone through puberty. It's questionable if the other ones are going through it still, you know.
Maybe they like the Baldies too, like Pete the Pedo.
That's so weird.
Oh, I don't even like to think about it.
Right. But so he goes up to talk to her. And I love this because Angela doesn't talk back to him. And immediately he goes, hey, Angela, why are you so fucked up? Like, what's your problem? It's like, dude.
Yeah, real macho.
There's several guys in this movie that their immediate reaction to rejection is, well, fuck you. Like, they just lose their shit. But that's the first time we see it. And then Ricky comes in. Oh, God.
They're just a couple of cockheads.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, this movie is the embodiment of toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm. It's actually not wrong. That's pretty fucking accurate. Because, again, here we get another one. Ricky comes in, and he sees them talking to his cousin. And he, again, goes from 0 to 60. He starts screaming and swearing at him, threatening them, and then suddenly we get a dog pile. All the old douches jump on Ricky and start beating the shit out of him. Paul jumps in the middle of it. the counselors come and break it up. They kick the older guys out. They tell Ricky to get back to the bunk. And then Paul kind of goes over and talks to Angela for a minute. And before he gets dragged out too. But he tells her, you know, he's sorry for what happened to her and her family. He goes, Ricky told me, you know, I'm real sorry what happened to you guys. And we see Judy eyeballing him with that one big eye.
With her frog eye.
Right. Talking to my good eye.
Oh my God. Okay. I actually feel bad for Paul because I feel he really is genuine. He genuinely does like Angela.
Yeah.
But he is a confused, like, pubescent teen. And I mean, in hindsight, being 41 years old.
Yeah.
Of course he, we'll get to it. I'm getting ahead of myself again.
Yeah, Paul is an interesting character because he clearly does like her, but he handles things poorly over and over. He makes some really bad choices. But real quick, I got to tell this short story because, you know, I mentioned the talking to my good eye. I know, Susie, I know you know this. Maurice, I don't know if I ever told you about this, but we're going years back. Me and my old manager from Media Play when I worked there, my buddy Jay, we used to go over to Canada for random things, you know, different like, you know, toy shopping, antique look, like looking for antiques. And then we would go over to the casino. Well, we're coming
Daily
back.
Planet for 80s night. Come on now.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We used to go to Screamers and Nightmares and all that. But we're on our way back. And now keep in mind, this is way before 9/11, way before any of that kind of stuff. So,
because we're that old, friends.
Yeah. And so being a jackass at the border didn't seem like as big of a deal as it would now. So we get up to the border coming back from Canada. And the guy asks us, like, you know, you got anything to declare, you know, bring anything back, blah, blah, blah. And Jay just looks at him and goes, talk into my good eye. I can't hear you. And he just looks at us and goes, pull over, sir. And I'm like, you asshole. So, yeah, every time there's something about a weird eye, I think, talk into my good eye. So, yes, that's what I was thinking about with Judy the whole time. But anywho, so Angela finally speaks, you know, because Paul tells her, well, anyway, have a good night. And then she says good night and the music swells and Paul looks all excited. He goes, good night. And he runs away. And then we see
because he's excited because this is the first time Angela has even spoken.
Right. But it's like, I love the music cue.
Yes. Because it's like that. Yeah. It really is totally 80s soap opera. It's like when the protagonist kisses, it's like,
exactly.
See, we have singing, just a different type this week.
Would that be scatting in a way? I don't know.
No, scatting is like pooping yourself. I don't do that.
That's what Artie did. Okay.
Got right.
But, so yeah,
shit stain.
Shit stain pedo. So he runs off and Judy is just, she looks pissed. Like that eye is about to fall out of her head. And
she needs to get some super glue.
Pop that shit back in. Mad eye. But, so now we cut to the old douches by the water trying to convince girls to come skinny dipping with him. None of the girls are interested. And the one girl goes, why don't you start without us? And he just immediately, he goes, to hell with you then. You don't know how to have any fun anyway. Come on, boys.
Right. So psychotic. Again, it's homoerotic. I have never known a group of guys, and a lot of my friends, most of my friends have always been guys who have been like, all right, we don't need these dames. Let's go skinny dipping alone. Like, I don't think that's really something that actually happens.
Yeah, I've never gone skinny dipping with a group of my friends. So,
and again, the hyper masculinity, the all right, we don't need you dames. Like, right. it's just very homoerotic.
No, because they're just gonna grab each other's dicks.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what happened next because we cut to a shot of pale asses running in the moonlight.
And tidy whities.
Are you drowning? I will save you. Oh, I will. Wait. Why is your mast extending?
Well, they all go and jump in the lake, and they're all whooping and hollering and like shoving on each other, and you know, it's like, well, it's just, yeah,
they're fishing. They're fishing with their fishing poles.
They are.
They got their little worm dangling out.
Yeah. But then they go to this canoe with no life jackets.
Well, no, we cut to Kenny and Mike smoking up. And then Mike is daring Kenny to go ask Leslie to go canoeing with him. And Kenny comes up and asks her, and she's like, no. And he's like, come on, I won't try nothing, I promise. And then we cut to them in the canoe rowing in the lake. And he's got his hand, or she's got her hand in the water, and he's like, be careful, the water snakes come out at night. And he starts rocking the canoe. Like, he's such a dick. So he starts rocking it back and forth. She freaks out. Eventually, he rocks them both into the water.
Unfortunately for him, the snakes do come out at night.
This is true.
Right.
And not just the snakes that were in the water earlier.
No, not just his friend's snakes.
Yes.
But they're not wearing life jackets. What is one of my pet peeves in horror movies? Safety hazards.
Yep. So they fall in the water. Leslie gets pissed off and swims away. Kenny's laughing at her. And then he goes underwater and resurfaces under the now tipped over canoe. So he's like in the little air pocket under there, and he's singing to himself. And he's very amused with himself.
He's like, then, ooh, baby. Oh, wrong movie.
Wrong movie, Susie. Wrong movie.
He saw her swim away. Why is that fucker trying to be like, Leslie, is that you?
Leslie, are you out there?
He hears somebody, and then out of nowhere, we see someone pop up underwater with him, but it's just the back of their head. And he goes, what the hell are you doing here? And then the person just grabs his head and dunks him until the bubbles stop.
Wait till the boys find out that you're here.
I really love how all of the like shitty males in this movie talk like, yeah, dare hey.
What do you mean?
Like a caricature of Tony Danza as in Who's the Boss?
And we're gonna get another one real soon.
Yes, we are.
Because the boys are back on the shore. They're getting dressed, and they're like, "Where's Kenny?" And they're like, "Oh, he's probably just messing around. Leave him. He'll come back to the cabin when he wants to." So they all go back to the cabin. We cut to the next morning, and we see a really annoyed counselor just hucking chairs around by the water.
He's like, "That guy!
He's so pissed." And Maurice. What did he say? Go ahead.
These peckerheads suck.
He really liked that word because he uses it again later.
Yes, he does.
But so he sees the rolled over canoe. He goes, who the fuck put this here? And he goes and he rolls it over, and we find dead Kenny with a snake that crawls out of his mouth. And the guy just screams, he's like, and he runs away.
Well, I guess there were water snakes.
I just wrote, oh my God, they killed Kenny, you bastard.
And he starts blowing the whistle. I mean, Kenny had it coming.
I wrote down, hey, Kenny, Kenny found his water snakes he was talking about.
Or they found him. But I'm bummed.
True.
But so that we cut to the next day, what am I saying? We cut to the next scene where Kenny is being taken away in a body bag. Mel is just freaking out and insisting that it was an accident. The cop that's there, he's like, well, you know, I don't know. And he goes, oh, I think the kid hit his head. You know, he went out canoeing at night. He hit his head and he drowned. It had to be that. And they're like, well, there was no bruises or you know, marks on his head when we checked him, which I find funny because when we see that body, he's covered in like welts and sores and all nasty looking.
Yeah, right. He has a black eye.
Yeah, I'm like, so, no, he definitely had markings.
The snake gave him the black eye posthumously.
But Mel's like, he's like, no, it was an accident. He storms away. And then Ronnie makes a comment to the cop. He goes, you know, the thing is, he goes, I remembered him being a pretty good swimmer. So it's like, dun, dun, dun. He didn't just accidentally drown, did he? And the cop's like, well, for your sake, I hope you're wrong. It's like, why? What did Ronnie do?
And then he tips his hat. He's like, later booty shorts. Gets in the car and drives away. Fast forward to Paul and Angela.
Well, we see the girls playing volleyball. And
yes, I forgot.
She's just watching, and much to the annoyance of Judy. And then, Meg. Yep, and then Paul comes over and talks to Angela, and that's when Judy gets pissed. Because and Angela just opens right up to him. Like, you know, he starts talking to her, and he asks her to go to the rec hall, the movie at the rec hall with him tonight. And she's like, don't we all have to go? He goes, yeah, but we could go together. And she's like, okay.
We can go together.
And then Judy pipes up. She goes, hey, how come Angela gets to talk to the boys all day and we have to play volleyball? Why is she so special? And then Meg comes over and shoos Paul away and starts yelling at Angela. And then Susie comes to Angela's rescue and shoos Meg away, like, get out of here, Meg. And then so we cut to later that night. We see the movie ending. The kids are leaving the rec hall. Angela and Paul leave hand in hand. Judy follows behind them with her giant eye, just watching them. And then Ricky runs up to talk to Judy. Judy's too busy eye fucking Angela to pay Ricky any mind. And so we see Paul and Angela go back to the girls' cabin. And Paul steals a kiss to very dramatic music.
Oh, that music was great.
It's triumphant music. It's like, da da da.
Well, and then Angela looks, you know, upset. Like, she was not too happy about that. And then Paul's like, can I have another one? And it's like, well, you stole the first one. That's kind of a dick move.
Doesn't he ask her? I said, if I remember correctly, he says, should I have not done that? Something to that effect. Can I steal another one? She goes, I'm not mad. But then he kisses her again, and it's obvious, like, she's not kissing him back. She's like, oh, my God, I wish we were together right now so you could see my face, because I'm like,
Yeah, she was dead, like, dead face.
Like, yeah, she's, like putting her entire mouth over to the opposite side that he's kissing. So it's like he's only kind of kissing, like, the crevasse of her cheek.
Exactly, like... She's not happy, because then as soon as, like, he kisses her again, and it plays the same music cue again, so we
dun,
get
to... da, da.
And then Angela's like, I gotta go to bed now, and she runs inside. So she looks disturbed. And then Judy comes up and confronts Paul, wanting to know why he's wasting his time with her. And Paul's
now, was she disturbed, or was she starting to get an erection?
Oh, good point.
Oh, now you're giving away the ending. Damn it, Maurice.
I'm pretty sure most people know.
Right, I know.
Spoilers.
I know.
Any fan of this show has seen this movie.
That's true.
We hope.
Yeah.
We know.
Hey, I know we didn't say spoilers ahead at the start of this one, but you guys know the drill by this point.
Right.
So, I mean, I didn't think of that. That actually, you know, plays a different role now that you mentioned that. I'm like, shit, that kind of changes her reaction several times over now. Like makes me wonder if that might have been what was going on. Like, cause she clearly liked him, you know? Yeah. So it's like, yeah, maybe. But anyway, Judy is picking on Paul, wanting to know why he's wasting his time with her. And he's like, fuck off, Judy. I can't remember what he says, but he basically blows her off. And, you know, she gives him the eyeball. And then we cut to Paul coming into the boys' cabin, and they're pranking Mozart again. They got shaving cream in his hand, and they're tickling his nose and make him slap the shaving cream all over his face. He gets pissed and pulls a fucking knife and starts chasing Ricky around the cabin.
Like, shit like that would not fly today. That kid would be, like, in a 48-hour psych lockdown.
Because Gino just walks in and goes, hey, 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 what's going on here? Give me that.
What are you doing with that?
Give me that knife.
You'll have it by the end of summer if you're lucky.
But then doesn't he, like, put it under towels where all the boys
Yeah, he put it on the top shelf.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, you shrimps can't reach up here, nor can you climb. I'm going to put it up here. Maybe you'll get it back.
Only me, Tony Danza, can do it.
Tony Danza number two.
Angela! Mona!
Now listen here, Mozart.
Mozart is just such, he really is like the quintessential fodder in this movie. Mm-hmm. He serves no purpose other than to play pranks on.
Yeah. He literally has like maybe three lines in the entire movie, and he gets an ass face and shaving cream.
He's a pretty good outfielder.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
He was able to drop the game and still make the catch. So he's got some potential there.
Yeah, that's I forgot about that.
Wasn't his boxing game like on a calculator, you said, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was
one of those mini video games back then.
I think it was like one of those like really old electronic games where it was like the little LCD screen.
Yeah.
But
the simpler times.
Right. So then he goes, Gino's like, all right, everybody in bed, you two love a boy, and he points at Paul. And they all just dogpile on Paul to like the like almost like sitcom end music, like the da 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 type of music.
And then, again, homoerotic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have never known dudes or like young guys to climb on top of each other like, oh, you silly kid.
I'm going to rub my balls on you, you know. Oh, my God. But so we cut to the next day by the lake and we see Paul sneaks up on Angela and covers her eyes and he goes, guess who? She goes, Ricky. And he goes, nope. Burt Reynolds, you're getting warmer. I'm like, yeah, it ain't even close, little bastard. She goes, I give up.
He doesn't even have hair in his balls, all over his face for a mustache.
We didn't see his balls, Maurice. We don't know about that.
Well, we see his ass later on, and it's pretty hairless.
You can have a hairless ass and still have a full bush on balls.
True.
So I'm told.
Uh-huh. Right.
I'm a married woman. I'm an honest girl now.
So then he uncovers her eyes and goes, surprise. And she goes, who are you? And I just wrote, burn.
She actually had some humor. I was surprised.
Yep. But so then they talk. And
I guess she was over the kiss.
Well, yeah, she is pretty warm to him from this point from this point for a little while. But yeah, they talk. And of course, Judy comes up and meddles in it because Judy sucks. Paul shoos her away and she goes and gets Meg. Now, Meg comes over and Paul bails. Oh,
these fucking bitches.
Meg starts yelling at Angela about not going in the water. She's like, how come you don't go in the water for a swim? What are you afraid? And Angela just stares at her. She's like, answer me. Answer me, you little shit. She starts shaking her like a British nanny. She just like...
Like, that is so fucking uncalled for.
Right. But I love
that. That is shaken teenager syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God Ronnie intervenes and he's like, Meg, what the fuck is wrong with you? You can't be shaking the kids here. And she's like, fuck you, Ronnie. I'm gonna go and... Tan my bush.
Wow, okay, that's something I've never heard.
I just made that up on the fly.
I feel like that's some kind of thing I'm just not aware of with Rule 34.
Well, if you think about, like, tanning leather, you, like, you slap it on something, right? So maybe you remember beef curtains. Beef mm-hmm. curtains.
Yep.
Maybe it's along those lines.
Tan in the bush. Oh,
I remember Beef from Phantom of the Paradise.
Maybe he had curtains too. Maybe his testicles. Do your tusks hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? Can you tie them in a knot? Can you tie them in a bow?
I'm pretty sure he'd be able to do that.
Probably.
He was very theatrical. So.
So anyway. Meg is a fucking bitch.
She really is. And then, so yeah, we cut to Judy getting out of the shower and Angela's just staring at her. Then Judy blames Angela for Meg getting in trouble and starts questioning why Angela doesn't take showers with the rest of them. She basically accuses her of liking girls.
I fucking hate that part. She's like, what, are you a queer?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Judy.
And that's the thing. Like, she starts mocking her, and then she's, like, making fun of Angela's body. And that Susie tries to intervene at this point, and Judy just keeps going. She goes, she's a real carpenter's dream, flat as a board and needs a screw. And Susie goes, stop it. And she goes, fuck off. And then Susie just smacks her.
Good. And back in the 80s, you could do that.
Yep.
Because that bitch is a fucking cunt.
Mm-hmm. But the best part is Susie just kind of knocks that bitch out of frame. And then she grabs her face like, oh my God, like she can't believe what she did.
She's like, I don't believe I did that. And I'm like, bravo.
She's like, I just knocked that bitch the fuck out. But then Angela gets up and she's just like, I'm going to go see Ricky. And she bolts. And this part, oh my God, I had to pause it. I could not stop laughing. So we cut to the old douches for some reason up on a roof with some of the younger kids having a water balloon fight from 3 feet away from each other, which is just funny. Like, okay, why on a roof and why so damn close to each other? But the scene that gets me is we see Angela walking across the yard, and the one douche throws a water balloon at her, and he hits her and just takes her the fuck out. Like, she just drops.
Well, if you look at her dry, she's like 40 pounds.
Right.
But so a water balloon thrown at her, I don't know physics. I am not Stephen Hawking.
But that shit just took her out of frame. I couldn't stop laughing.
No, it is so funny. It's even funnier because when all is said and done, Angela is not even wet.
She's like curled in a fetal position, like holding her legs.
And then Ricky comes up and he's like threatening the boys, and
I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker. Yeah.
And then Smokey comes up and he's like, is this the first time that Smokey thinks that he knows who the perp is?
I think
he thinks it's Ricky.
I think this is where he starts getting a little inkling of it, because we see Ricky yelling at the old douches, like Maurice was saying, you motherfuckers, like just freaking
the you dirty rat, you water balloon my sister, you daddy rat, ooh.
Well, then Mel comes running up and he grabs Ricky and then he yells at the boys. He's like, get down off of there, what the hell are you doing? And I love that because he goes, you guys should be more careful. You know, you could take an eye out with one of them things. And I'm thinking, with a water balloon? Like, was this a thing in the 80s? Like, beware of water balloons. You'll shoot your eye out.
What's in the
you'll
water balloon?
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Is there frozen semen? A dart? A murder hornet? We don't know.
They were filled with urine and murder hornets.
I mean, urine itself. Ooh, bleh.
Yeah, you don't want that. You don't want that anywhere near you, let alone your eye.
What if there's poop? What if you get, like, pink eye? Or you get sepsis?
That's no fun.
Right. You don't want that shit.
But literally.
The hell you say.
Rule 34, my friend. But so yeah, Mel basically grounds everybody. He's like, no canteen for the rest of you for the whole week. And it took me a minute because I'm like, what do you mean by canteen? What is this? It's the little shop in the rec hall. I didn't know that until later.
But the canteen is literally the counter where you're like, bartender, I'll take your finest birch beer.
Right. I mean, I'm probably just unaware of that phrasing, but I had never heard that before. I had heard of a cantina, but not, you know, a canteen.
Right. The canteen is like, that's the summer camp thing.
Right. But so then Paul comes running over and he like kind of, you know, tries to comfort Angela, who's like cradled in a fetal position. And then Ricky goes running over and talks to her. And then first he goes and talks to her, and then he gives like the evil eye to the douche with no shirt on, which I didn't get any of their names, but the douche who was like, to hell with you then, with the skinny dipping girls. So the leader
is a bunch of fodder anyways.
Right. So fodder one, but Yeah, Ricky gives him the evil eye, and then we cut to a bunch of kids running, and he's running alongside of them and runs into the boys' cabin. And they're like, hey, you coming down to the mess hall? And he goes, yeah, sure, but I got to take a wicked dump first. He grabs a magazine and goes in the stall. And everybody
leaves. Like, who the fuck says that? I have to take a wicked... I mean, I guess guys do. Never mind.
I always said taking the Browns to the Super Bowl, but that's just me.
I don't know why I find this so funny.
I didn't expect to break you with that. That must be a first for her. I've heard you say that a few times.
I was going to say, yeah. I know I've said that to you because you and I have been like talking after a movie and I'm like, well, I got to go because I got to take the Browns to the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Lord.
It's the only way they're going to the Super Bowl, too.
I mean, exactly. Truth.
Oh, but so the other guys leave because they're like, well, fuck that. I don't want to be around to smell this. So they all leave. And we see someone is in the cabin with him, and they put a broom handle across the stall doors, kind of locking him in place. And then the person goes outside because we see a hand come up with a knife in the screen behind the toilet. And they cut the screen open, and he's like, hey, who's back there? Who's fucking around? He's like, get out of here. And then you see a beehive on a stick come in the window. And just starts shaking around, and you hear all this buzzing, and he's freaking out. He's like, hey, what you doing? And Susie, I wrote it down. He yanks up his
mud top. Butt. Yeah. Mud butt. The old beehive in the bathroom. Also, I want to mention that he doesn't have any underwear on. So does he have like a baby micro penis? Where he doesn't require underwear because there are no tidy whities, or does he just pull down the shorts, poop in his underwears, and then fling them at unwilling campers?
I wouldn't be surprised at that one.
I think it's the micro penis myself. Anyone else want to take a bet?
I would say maybe
I'm going to go with micro penis.
All right, micro penis for 2000, Alex.
And so micro penis, we hear him screaming and yelling, and he's slamming against the door, and we see the broom handle kind of like splintering and breaking. Eventually he breaks out, but it's too late. He falls over dead. We see all these like welts all over him, and there's bees crawling all around him. So we cut from him being like dead douche, we cut to Mel flipping out going, we're gonna have to close, this is gonna ruin me. And then Mel comments about how he thinks there's a killer on the loose. And he doesn't say who he suspects. He goes, I should have known. I should have seen it sooner. And Ronnie's like, Mel, you're talking crazy. And he's like, no, I know what's going on. And then we cut away to Angela sneaking around in the woods. And we see a POV shot behind her of someone sneaking up. And then they put their hand on her. She jumps. And we see, oh, it's just Paul, that rascal. And...
Fat rapscallion.
And then she's like,
"Rascally Paul."
He goes, What are you doing out here? She goes, I'm looking for the killer. And he's like, let's go to the lake.
And she's like, okay.
I'm looking for the killer. Let's go to the lake. Yay. But so they run to the lake and they're kind of like playfully chasing each other. Angela kind of like playfully trips him. He runs after. There's sweeping music playing the whole time. They roll around on the beach.
Roll on the beach.
I didn't know we were watching X-Files.
And it's that Young Frankenstein episode.
This part is so awkward because they start kissing and she actually kisses him back. Mm-hmm. And then he's just... He cannot undo one button.
Well, right. He immediately tries to undo her top, and she tries to stop him, and he goes, come on, Angela, I'm not doing anything, and then continues to try to do it. It's like, all right, now you're starting to show yourself to be a douchebag, Paul. Like, right. I get it. You're a teenager, but no.
She There's said no. Excuse no. For that. Exactly. And no is no.
But don't be like Paul.
Right. Yes. Don't be like Paul. Where's that stick figure meme when you need it?
Right.
So he continues to try to struggle with that one button and Angela, and they're making out and she's uncomfortable with it. You can definitely see it. And then we get this flashback of her dad or of dad with a male lover. So it's here's the guy question. From the beginning. Yes. So they talk about in the beginning, Aunt Martha coming with Ricky. Is that Aunt Martha's husband?
Oh, shit. I never thought about that.
I think every time I've watched this movie, I've always thought that has to be the uncle to Aunt Martha.
Oh, wow. That puts a new spin on this entirely.
If anyone has any information confirming or not or disconfirming that, please share that with us. But it's I have always the only thought reason
why they would show it.
Right. Well, I have always, well, because he's in the beginning, but also at that time when he's like, hey, the doctor's office is closing. The kids are like, is Aunt Martha coming with Ricky too? So the two means also implying that maybe that is Uncle.
Right.
Uncle Doe. And then dad and the uncle are actually having an affair. Because then after that, it cuts to two children on a toddler bed.
Right.
And they're facing each other. And the boy, and it's a girl and a boy, and the boy points to the girl. And I always thought that to mean that, like, as a child, Ricky recognized that Angela had an Adam's apple.
No, because that's the brother and sister from the beginning. That wasn't Ricky. That wasn't Ricky and the little girl. That was totally the same brother and sister that were on the boat.
Oh, it was?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. It was definitely those same two. And because now they were watching the dad and his lover in bed, and they were kind of giggling. See, I didn't take it as any of this. I took it as like, it's going to ruin the ending. But the whole thing about because Angela, you know, we find okay. I'm just going to say, and we find out Angela is really Peter, is really the little boy. And I always took it as like, because he kind of looks uncomfortable when Paul's kissing him, and he kind of goes away. But then he's like thinking about how his dad was getting. It was almost like he's following in his dad's footsteps. Like,
oh my god, that makes so much sense.
Like that's kind of what I thought, because then it cuts to the little kids in the bed, and the little boy Peter is pointing at his sister, and then the room starts spinning and spiraling and spiraling and spiraling. And then we cut back to present day. And Angela yells no, and she shoves Paul off of her, and she runs away, like runs off into the night to dramatic music.
Oh, my God. No, that makes a lot of sense. This whole time, I thought that it was the Adam's apple.
Yeah, no, I that was totally the brother and sister. Like, okay. Yeah.
No, I'm glad you clarified that for me. But, yeah, the dad, it's definitely the dad, I think, the uncle.
Yeah, that would make sense. Like, and I never thought about that. So, especially with that conversation at the beginning. So it's like, okay, yeah, this is why we have these discussions.
Look at that. We're educating each other and the listeners.
Yep. So now we cut to the next day.
Capture the fucking flag.
Yep. Kids are playing capture the flag with the counselors. And we see Paul trying to talk to Angela. And he goes, I still don't understand what got you so upset last night. I wasn't doing anything that bad, was I? And she goes, I'm sorry, Paul. I just wasn't ready. And then he gets all macho, puts his arm around her, and he's like, hey, I understand. And it's like, clearly you don't understand. So she shoves him off and walks away, and Paul gets all pissed. He's like, what did I do wrong? And that's when Judy comes up to Paul and starts talking to him about, like, why are you wasting your time? Now we cut to Angela walking away from the field. Ricky comes running up to her and he's like, hey, I got a plan how we can win. He's like, but I need your help. We gotta go through the woods, cut through the woods to get to their base. While you distract them and they're chasing after you, I'm going to grab the flag and win. So he's like, can you help me out? Can you help me? So she agrees. They cut through the woods and then they come upon Judy and Paul kissing in the woods. Angela freaks out and runs off. Paul chases after her. Judy's sitting there with a smug look, and Ricky's like, you know, Judy, you're a real asshole. And she gets all pissed and flips him off, and he just walks away and flips her off behind his shoulder. So then, and then she just stands alone in the woods doing her Popeye impression.
Oh my God, please. Somebody Photoshop Judy's face with Popeye pipe and cap. Perhaps even protrude her chin.
Well, she did always stick her face up into the side when she was like,
that is true.
That look. But so now we cut back to, we cut back to the lake again, and we see Paul comes up to Angela and he tries to apologize to her and he wants a second chance. And then Judy comes up to stir the pot and be a bitch. She's like, she goes, Paul, didn't you say Angela was a prude? Isn't that the word you used? And he's like, fuck you, Angela, or fuck you, Judy. And then Judy tells Angela that she needs to go for a swim and then runs and grabs Meg. And Angela, you know, basically, or Angela's sitting there watching as Paul leaves and Meg and Judy come over.
My question here is, why the fuck is Meg still even employed? She has done nothing but bully and demean one of the campers. And I get it, like simpler times, it was the 80s, but how can that even be okay?
Right. It's, yeah, I mean, it's total bully behavior from one of the employees to one of the kids. That's just not allowed, or shouldn't be allowed. But, so yeah, Meg throws Angela over her shoulder. Angela starts screaming bloody murder. And at this point, we see Ricky walking toward the lake. And then Mel kind of stops him, pulls him aside. And he's like, you know, how are you liking the summer, Ricky? He's like, you got any complaints? And he's like, well, I wish there were more guys to play ball with. And they're kind of just having a chat. And Ricky's kind of like looking toward the crowd of kids. Then Ricky sees Angela being dragged toward the water by Meg and Judy. Like, Meg's carrying her, and Judy's walking behind her, just making kissy faces at Angela and laughing while Angela's screaming bloody murder. Ricky tries to run and help her, and Mel grabs him, and he just starts accusing him of being a murderer.
He's like, you dirty rat! You killed Pete the pedo! You dirty rat! You killed the kid in the canoe! Ooh!
He goes, every time she was in trouble, you came a-running, didn't you, Ricky? You killed him, didn't you? Didn't you? He's just shaking him. And then, you know, so Ricky's freaking out. Ronnie runs up and breaks it up between Mel and Ricky. He's like, what the hell's the matter with you, Mel? And then Ricky goes running off. Meg now throws the now pleading Angela into the water. Angela spazzes the fuck out. Like, she's freaking out, splashing around. The counselor who found Kenny comes running up as Ricky comes running up, and they both help her out of the water as Meg and Judy kind of laugh. The counselor turns to Meg and he goes, you're a real peckerhead, you know that, Meg? That fucking cracked me up. And then we cut to Ricky hugging Angela and promising her that they won't get away with this, that they'll all pay. So it's like, ooh, ominous. And then
Ricky might be the killer if you have never seen this movie before.
Red herring. So then we cut to later that night, and the counselors are all talking about their assignments. Ronnie tells Eddie that he's going to take all the young kids camping out in the woods, much to his annoyance. And then Meg, and I forget who else he said, but he gave Meg and somebody else the night off. So Meg's all excited that she has the night off, and she goes and tries to hook up with Mel.
Oh my God, that's so fucking gross. Like, what can she possibly gain with that? Well, does she just have an attraction to old people? Because she's like, hey, Mel, Smokey, you're old enough to be my gramps. Wanna fuck?
She's like, remember that dinner you promised me? He's like, oh, yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, let me amend that statement.
Say 9:30.
If you want to fuck, you got to feed me first. He's like, okay, 9:30, come on over.
I put, apparently she likes them old and chimp-like, because tell me he didn't look like a chimpanzee.
No, he definitely did. He
had the ears and the weird mouth.
Yeah.
But so they make their dinner date. Meg goes back to the cabin to shower, and the line is way too long.
Oh, my God. And then she goes, you wouldn't let me cut you, would you? And the girls all turn around like a wave at a Sabres game. And they're like, she's like, oh, okay. And then fucking cunt Judy is like, yeah, the water's still on next door if you want to take a shower there. And she's like, all right, bye-bye. Going to get fucked by my grandpa. Now, here's a total 80s callback. So Meg is in the shower and she's humming some dumbass tune that she made up herself because she's a dumbass. And she pours Flex shampoo. Flex.
Yep.
That is 80s shampoo that I used when I was a kid.
Yep.
They don't make that shit no more. So if you have a bottle like hidden in the back of your grandma's like linen cupboard, you could probably sell that on eBay for like at least $40.
Discontinued shampoo.
Right. And then she's like, ha ha ha, fuck in the mail. I'm going to get my dick or his dick.
I love the pause. I'm going to get my dick. Pause.
I misspoke. So she wants Mel to get it in. And she's like leaning up and then the killer, we don't know who it is yet, but you do. Mm-hmm. Stabs. And she's like, ah.
Yeah. I will say this, when we see the body later, it looked painful, but this death scene, I laugh every fucking time.
I do
because
too.
It's a back and forth, cut back and forth. Like for whatever reason, Mel leans against the back of the shower. And then you see the knife on the other side stab through the shower. And she just kind of goes, oh, and makes this face. And then she's going like, oh, ah, oh, like all these weird.
Because she's masturbating in the shower. And she's like reaching orgasm as she's saying, she's like, oh, ah, oh.
That sounds just like someone taking a shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was very, very dump-like.
She probably shat while she was dying as well. I mean, we don't know.
She shat came dying?
Mel won't know.
True. Well, until later. Because like Axel says, it's still good.
Oh, my God.
But... So, yeah, we see the knife sliding down the wall, and there's just, like, blood pouring out of the wall. And then, you know, she's dying on the other side. And then we see the killer. We just see the hand of the killer holding the bloody knife. And they rinse it off in the shower and then turn off the water. I laughed my ass off through this whole sequence.
Yes. Also, they didn't rinse all the blood off, so what the fuck are you gonna do now, bitch?
Right. It was like, what was the point of that?
Once they get the majority of the blood off, so then there's only a few. 1983, they didn't have forensics like we do too. The killers don't have to be as meticulous as we have to now. Or I'm sorry, they have to now.
Exactly. But so
is this recording?
We might have to edit some parts.
Oh boy, is the FBI going to show up at my house tomorrow?
Maybe.
Oh, buddy.
But
I have never killed anybody. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have a jury decide that.
A likely story.
Despite the fact that when we were growing up, like I told my sisters and brothers that we had another child between myself and Carol, because Carol and I are 7 years apart, and I buried her in the crawl space. Her name was Tiffany. I created an entire backstory for her.
I think that's an older sibling thing, because my brother convinced me that we had another brother, but he died and he was in the wall.
Good. Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I did that, and then when they wouldn't behave, I would lay on the floor and play dead. And then until they cried, and I was like, I am back to life. Praise Jesus.
See, my sister would do that to us.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I have always thought that I was a horrible sibling. Like, they don't behave, make them think you're dead. They don't behave, There's a dead sibling in the crawl space.
There's a dead Suze.
Right. Okay. I feel better about my life now. Siblings, I'm sorry, but it was the 90s. I had to do what I needed to survive.
It's the older sibling thing. They torture the young.
Right. Simpler times. But anyway, back to Sleepaway Camp and Angela.
Well, we cut to Eddie with the kids going to the campsite in the woods. And then Eddie goes to get firewood with Chekhov's hatchet while the kids go to set up camp. Then we cut to Paul runs into Angela at the social and he tries to talk to her. She wants none of his shit. And then we see Judy walk between them with Mike trailing behind her. And, you know, she just like shoves her way between them. Then Paul begs Angela for forgiveness and she tells him to meet her by the waterfront after the social. So we cut to the kid campers in the woods. Two of the kids are too cold and can't sleep, and they want Eddie to take them back to the cabin. So they're begging him, and finally he agrees. He's like, all right, fine. And he looks back, there's like the four other kids, they're all asleep. And he's like, well, you know, fuck it, they'll be fine. So he leaves with the two kids, and then we see a POV shot in the campsite picking up the hatchet. So we cut to Mel walking into the social wearing his best
golf attire.
Yes! I read it. His best old man golfing outfit.
It really does look like there are these lime green pants. And then he has like a plaid shirt and a cardigan over it. And he's smoking that fucking cigar. And he's like, I'm ready to get a hole in one. Where's Meg?
Well, he's got another hole to choose from.
Oh, God. Oh. He does.
That's really a slit. Oh, never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Just keep going. Just keep going.
I was trying to keep it PG-13.
We are an R-rated podcast.
I think a few times we've been NC-17.
I think I haven't said fuck enough this episode. Fuck, 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 fuck.
Fuckity fuck, fuck. We've met our quota.
There we go. We're rated R podcast.
So... he goes in, he's asking everybody if they've seen Meg. No one has, so he goes off to find her. Then we cut back to Judy and Mike in the girls' cabin. They're making out. They hear someone coming, so Mike hides under the bed, and then Judy pretends to be reading. So Mel comes in asking about Meg. Yeah. He comes in, he's like, you know, reading like that in the dark is going to ruin your eyes. Like, so he's totally a grandpa.
And she's like, all right, go get your limp dick wet.
Well, she tells him that Meg was next door taking a shower, but that was like after dinner. So, you know, she's not sure where she is now. So he goes, oh, okay. And he leaves and goes looking for her. Mike comes out from under the bed and Judy wants to resume their makeout session. But Mike's like, nah, I don't want to get caught. And she's like, you fucking chicken shit, and gets super pissed. And then gives him the eye fuck.
That's totally like a reverse role. Like usually it's the woman who says, nope, don't want to do it. And the guy gets all like blue balls over it. And it was refreshing to see that like Judy was really wanted, like, I just want to fuck this lamp. And he was like, not this lamp, not today.
Yep. So we see Mel going next door to find Meg. And I love this because, okay, Meg has been dead in the shower for a while. And just happens to fall forward through the curtain when Mel walks in.
Because plot.
Right. So her dead corpse was still standing, apparently, that long.
Do you think maybe it was booby-trapped?
No, I don't think they had a budget for that.
Okay. I was just trying to think of conventional reasons, realistic reasons, why she would have fallen forward at that point.
I think we just got to chalk it up to plot.
Yeah, plot. I'm okay with that.
So she falls forward, and I love Mel's reaction because it is the most blasé, couldn't care less. He goes, oh my God, not you, Meg. Oh no. Like, he's just so like, oh, I'm done with this fucking movie.
Not you.
No, he's like, not you. You're my only chance to get my dick wet.
Oh, now he's got to fuck the couch. But So he runs off. He's like, he goes, he's not going to get away with it this time. I'm going to find him. I'll get him back for you, Meg. And he runs off. So now we cut to Judy curling her hair in the darkness. And someone comes in. Now they're backlit, but I paused it. It looks like Angela wearing a Ricky mask. Like, I know it's not, but you get a very clear glimpse. That is Ricky's face. Like, I'll try to get a screen grab of it and post it online because it's very strange looking. But they approach. They, like, whoever it is, they come in. And then you hear Judy goes, oh, it's you. What do you want? Well, like, real cocky. And then she just gets smacked.
She gets knocked the fuck out. And then what do we get? Her curler in the vajayjay.
Yep. Pillow over the face and death by curling iron to the cooch. Yeah, that's an interesting way to go. Although, like I said, you know, she's technically not dead. I mean, if you count that as canon. I mean, I'm sure it was kind of one of those like fan things, but still. But yeah, so then I love it because they pull the bed out and they just roll her off and then push the bed over top of her. So body under the bunk. And now we see Eddie come back to the campsite and he finds all of the kids in sleeping bags. They're hacked all the fuck. So, like, the sleeping bags are tore up. There's blood everywhere. He pukes and freaks out.
It's the Jedi Temple all over again.
It was the younglings. Oh, shit.
Oh, Lord.
So we cut to Ricky going to the social to get some food. And the one guy's standing. He's like, hey, the social's over. You got to get back to your bunk. He goes, oh, come on. I've been laying down all day because dinner made me sick. And he's like, I just want to get something to eat. And he goes, yeah, dinner did suck. Okay, go ahead. And he's in there for like 2 fucking seconds. He comes out with an armload of candy.
He literally walks in. The lights shut off. And then he walks out with like Charleston Chew and Milk Duds and Clark bars, because that's what you ate in the 80s, I guess.
Yeah, well, I loved me some Charleston Chews and Milk Duds. I know that. But Clark bars, I honestly don't know if I've ever had a Clark bar, now that I'm thinking about it.
A Clark bar is really a Nestle Crunch, just a different company.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't think I ever had one of those.
That's why they're not as popular.
But so while Ricky is walking back to the cabin, in the background, we see Ronnie getting a phone call and he's like, oh, my God, no, really? How many of them? So he's getting a call about the kids. And then we see Mel just grab Ricky out of nowhere and drag him off into the woods and start beating him like a redheaded stepchild.
He's like, you killed Meg. You dirty rat, I want to diddle her corpse, but it's wrong.
And Henry Ricky's told me just... that's not allowed.
But the boogeyman's closet said that you don't diddle your corpse, you don't diddle a corpse or your sister. So now I don't know who to fuck.
So I'm just going to beat the shit out of you.
But Ricky really gets, like, knocked the fuck out.
Oh, yeah, so Mel whoops him.
He beats him into unconsciousness and then walks away. And he's like, yeah, Meg, I taught him, or something like that. He's like, I got him, Meg. I got him for you.
He runs up because he beats him down. He goes, yeah, I got him, Meg. I got him. And then he looks around like, oh, shit, I just beat up a kid. And he runs away. He runs off into the night.
And then much like, oh, my God, why can I not remember the movie? Was it Friday the 13th part 3? With the archery range?
It was one.
Okay.
Part one.
Yeah, it was one.
So call back to Friday the 13th part 1. Mel runs out and he's standing in front of a giant target. And he's like, oh, you dirty rat. Who are you? Well, and then all of a sudden, knight arrow to the throat. And he's like, oh, I'm Kevin Bacon.
Well, he's like, yo. Oh, no, I can't be you. And then he gets fucking arrowed to the throat. And I just, again, arrowed. And so, bye-bye, Mel. And then
bye, Smokey.
We cut to the cops showing up, or the cop, one cop, with his bad glued-on mustache, which, okay, now, I read the trivia after the movie. And there's a scene where we do a close-up on the cop's face, and I'm like, that is totally a fake mustache. Well, in the trivia, it said that the first scene that he was in was a real mustache, but I guess between that scene and this scene, he had shaved. So for continuity, they made him wear a fake mustache.
Oh my God.
That was ridiculous.
This is so funny too, because he takes the report and then he's walking through the woods. He finds a candy bar wrapper and he stops to read the nutrition value.
Well, yeah, because the cop was talking to the counselors and they're like, okay, get all the kids in your bunk. And then the one guy, I think it's Gino, he says, well, he goes, Paul and Ricky aren't back yet. And then I think it's Susie says, and neither is Angela. So they're like, we got to find him. So they all split up into groups and it was Gino and the cop. They go and they're in the woods. And then, yeah, the cop finds the candy bar wrapper for whatever reason, turns it over.
He's like, oh, there are 780 calories and 26 grams of fat per serving.
And then we cut to Paul waiting by the water for Angela. She finally shows up and she says, let's go swimming. And he goes, now? And he goes, but what about our clothes? And she goes, take them off. And he goes, okay. And then we cut to the cop with the bad, and the he's bad like, mustache.
It's like that. Never mind. I can't think of the musical artist. Forget it.
Well, we cut to him and Gino and they find Ricky in the woods. Beat to shit, coughing up blood, but still alive. So Gino picks him up and throws him over his shoulder, and they start heading back to the cabins when they hear a scream and go running. So they get to the one cabin, and they find there they see the one woman counselor walking out of the cabin saying Meg is dead. So the cop goes in to see for himself, and he comes out with this like shocked look on his face. And this is where we get the close up of that mustache, and it's like, man, that is so bad. I'll try to grab a screen cap of that too. But so now we cut back to we cut to Ronnie and Susie. They're out looking for the kids, and Ronnie's flashlight goes out, but they hear someone singing nearby. So they kind of go to investigate, and we see from behind, we see a naked Angela sitting in the sand, and naked Paul laying next to her with his head in her lap. And then we cut down, we see Paul kind of smiling and she's stroking his head and humming to herself. And the counselors come in closer. And now we cut to a flashback of crazy Aunt Martha talking to a bandaged up little kid and showing them new clothes. This whole conversation, she goes, of course I always wanted a little girl. But of course, when my husband left, and then it's like pause. And she goes, oh, well, that's all water under the bridge, as I always say, water under the bridge. But it certainly will be nice to have a little surprise for Richard when he comes home and finds a little girl in the house. And then she goes, yes, I always dreamed of having a little girl just like you. I mean, we already have a boy, so another one simply won't do. Oh, absolutely not. A little girl would be so much nicer. Don't you agree, Angela? And then she goes, Angela, such a lovely name. Why, I believe it means angel. Yes, I'm sure it does. I know you're going to love it, won't you, Peter? And then we cut back to present day, and we see naked Angela jumps up, hissing, and she's like covered in blood. And we see Paul's severed head roll away. Roddy and Susie like back up and look kind of shocked. And then Roddy goes, oh, my God. She's a boy. And then we get the full body reveal, dangle and all. And she's just hissing. That fucking dangle hiss. And all. And then we freeze frame on the terrifying face. Green screen, credits roll, the end. Like, that fucking ending. I don't care who you are. First time watch, that is always shocking. You know?
And yeah.
It's not
first
even
time watch, second time watch.
Right. It's not even so much the reveal of like, oh, my God, you know, Angela's actually Peter. Like, that's jarring the first time you see it. But it's that fucking look and that sound, that fucking hiss, man. Like, I don't even want to try to recreate it. It's horrifying, though. But, oh, my God. So, yes, if you guys have never seen it, at least watch it once just to see that ending. Because, fuck, it's creepy. But, yeah, so that's Sleepaway Camp 1. The sequels are, in my opinion, the sequels are much more entertaining, like, because they're so fucking weird and silly. Like, they lean heavily into the comedy. This is like Evil Dead 1 versus Evil Dead 2. Like, Evil Dead 1 is a great film, but Evil Dead 2 is just so fucking wacky and funny. And that's kind of how I feel about this franchise, you know? But, yeah. So, any comments before we get into trivia?
As always, if you have not watched the movie, you definitely should. It's free if you are on Shudder.
It is indeed. Maurice, what about you?
Same.
Again, I took the words right out of your mouth.
I know. You had the effect.
Just a few little bits of trivia. I didn't write down everything, but a few things I found interesting is that as a kid, the director, Robert Hiltzik, actually went to the camp that they used in the film as Camp Arawak. They didn't say, it doesn't say what the camp was actually called, but that was apparently his childhood campground, which I thought was kind of interesting. And this movie ended up making it, and I don't know how much the budget was, but it says it made 30 times more than was spent on it because it became such an unexpected hit. Like, no one really expected it to do gangbusters, but it blew up. Which, I mean, it makes sense because at the time, you figure when it came out, you know, Friday the 13th was like the biggest horror film for a while. So everyone was jumping on the camp slasher bandwagon. And this was one of the good ones. Like, this one actually was a good flick. So it would make sense that it gets held up to that high regard. As I mentioned earlier, Mike Kellen, the guy who played Mel, unfortunately did pass away. This was his last film. And he was really sick with lung cancer during the filming of this.
And he died right before it got released, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was 3 months before the film's release. And it even says here that he was doing his best to conceal how sick he was during the film. So it's kind of a bummer, you know, but especially because he was only 61 when he passed.
Yeah.
But
he was young. Yeah.
Yeah. The movie was shot in early fall, but set in midsummer. So apparently the crew had to spray paint brown leaves and grass green to keep the continuity. Mm. So they're out there spray painting the foliage.
Chemicals.
Right. Oh, man. I guess when casting for the role of Angela, what Robert Hiltzik asked the different actresses to do was just stare wide-eyed straight ahead and also pretend to eat a candy bar. So I'm like, okay. That just seems creepy.
So candy bar could be a metaphor for something else.
That's why I'm like, that seems pretty creepy. And the last thing that I found really, like, kind of fucked up was in the scene where Artie is slamming Ricky against the shelves in the pantry. Apparently they had to film that scene multiple times, and he really was slamming Ricky against the pantry. They said after it was over, Ricky had all the lines in his back from where he was slammed against the metal shelving.
Oh, my God.
So they fucked that kid up.
You gotta knock the fuck out!
But, so yeah, I know we probably already said everything we can say about this movie, so let's go into the social medias. That is, we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. Maurice is responsible for our Twitter, which is?
At Boogeyman's.
Thank you, good sir. Now, this was our last summer camp slasher movie, so we are going to be moving on to back to school horror. We felt that was kind of appropriate for September. By the time you hear this, the votes will have been cast, but you know, you can obviously join in and listen with us. But we will be taking the following week off. So we'll be taking off 1 week between the release of this and the release of the first of the school horror movies. Just so everybody knows, like, you didn't miss an episode. We're taking a break because since there was an extra Monday this month, and Lord knows we could all use a little time off. But yeah, we still got our contest going, our giveaways. So definitely check us out on social media so you guys can participate in that. By the time the first of the school horror movies goes up, we will have the September giveaway listed, and how you can win that one. There's still time to get, though, by the time you hear this, there will still be time to get in on the August one. So hopefully everybody that wants to participate has a chance to. And we received even more swag. So guys, we're just, these prize packages are just going to keep on getting better. I mean, if we keep going at this rate, I might say, fuck it, let's do some more right into the new year. Because as it stands right now, we got enough to do awesome prize packs right up through the end of the year. And like I said, we're doing two in December. You know, since it's Christmas time, we're gonna have two different chances to win something. But yeah, I mean, you guys are really coming out in droves to give us a bunch of awesome stuff to give away to the fans. And again, we can't thank you enough. That really means a lot. It's a lot of fun for us. And I hope you guys are having just as much fun with it as we are. So once again, thank you for all of that. And yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
Nope. I just want to say that if you are interested in donating any type of art, or if you want to promote your band, or if you just want us to give you a shout out, message me directly on Facebook, Susie Hunt, and we'll make it happen. I've already gotten several things for giveaways. Shout out to my friend Kevin McGee and the Living Brain Dead. Got your CD coming. My friend Leland Allen IV, his band Yellow Sauce, check them out. They're going to have a CD coming up, and we're going to get one of those in a prize pack. But both bands are available on Spotify, and thank you for continuing to listen and reach out if you would like to be part of one of our giveaways.
Absolutely. And also, if you want to be a guest on the show, I know we've been mentioning that lately, but we've had a lot of guests and we always have fun doing that. So more participation is always a fun thing for us. So if you guys are listening to this and go like, gee, I really want to be a part of one of these episodes, well, hit one of us up, you know, whether it be me, Mike Alvarez, Maurice Killifer, or Susie Hunt, like, let any of us know. You can hit us up on the Boogeyman's Closet social media or our individual pages. And yeah, we'd love to have more guests on here. It's always fun times. So I guess we'll close it off with that. And so yeah, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
I still don't have a penis. I'm a woman. I have a vagina.
I don't have a penis either.
Well, I identify as a woman as well.
I love that. Oh, no.
You're okay. We're both okay. I have a vagina. You have a penis. I identify as female. You identify as male. We're good. Have a good night, guys. Thank you.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Felissa Rose. No, wait, that's not right. Hi, I'm Jonathan Tiersten from Sleepaway Camp, and you are listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Listen, or Kane Hodder will seriously kill you.